April Fool's at all?
No April Fool's.
I thought it was actually an April Fool's joke today.
Well, it is. No pant. Like, we brought all these people in just to...
Yeah.
All right. This is Sean Slusser. Today is April 1st, 2017. I'm conducting an oral history with Vil Tao. Yep. I say that right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And this is for Straight Out of Fresno Project, a project for Fresno State's Valley Public History Initiative. Just wanted to get that down. So usually, just like to start these really general. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of your family history, kind of?
Let's see, my family history. Let's see. Well, I wasn't really born in Fresno. Let me see. I was actually born in the Midwest.
Okay.
It was Denville, Illinois. That's how I got my name. It was actually because I was born in Denville, Illinois. It's like a suburb out of Chicago a little bit.
Yeah.
And I believe my parents was sponsored out there when they came from Thailand. And I was the first one born in America here. You know, out of my siblings, I have two older siblings that are born over there. And let me see, I want to say I was probably about 3 when we moved to Fresno.
Okay. What's your birthday?
Cinco de Mayo, actually. You know, nice. May 5th, 79.
Okay. Do you know when your parents came?
I want to say they came somewhere in 78.
Okay.
And then I was born in 79.
Do you know kind of their story about how they ended up coming to Illinois?
I don't recall. I mean, I know that they, you know, with a lot of refugees, everybody was, you know, just, you know, whoever was sponsoring, people were just, you know, if they had that chance, they took that chance and they came. I still kind of recall my dad saying that he had an option to go to Australia.
So you could have had a whole different accent.
Yeah, I could have. I mean, I have families out there that are in Australia right now. And, but, you know, I mean, I've seen them here and there, and actually, you know what? All my cousins out there are actually doctors now. You know, they're doing
interesting.
Different. It's a big difference, I guess.
Doctors and b-boys.
Doctors and b-boys. I mean, it's the environment when you grow up in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Other than that, I mean, yeah. My dad didn't take that offer, and he actually took the offer to come out to America because I think my father was chasing more of his relatives, you know.
Hmm.
You know, did have some relative that went to Australia, but I think the majority of the relative actually came out to America. And so we decided to come out here.
Do you know much about, like, where they came from before that?
As far as my parents?
Yeah, like before
that. Well, let me see. You know, my dad was actually, he was a teacher out there. You know, he was a soldier, he was a teacher. You know, he was always in school. I mean, I think my father is totally different from me. I mean, my mom, she came from, a well-fitted family in the Hmong community. You know, my grandpa was, highly respected. Well, my grandpa from my mom's side, he was highly respected. And he was actually a leader, a mayor. In the cities that before all the war and stuff.
Do you know where they were?
I don't track back to that much stuff too much, but that history is just, those folks they don't talk too much about it no more. But I mean, as far as I know, I mean that's what I know. So
would this be like Laos or?
Yeah, this is in Laos. Okay. Yeah.
Did your parents meet out there?
Yeah, they met out there. My parents met out there. And then I think when all the war started happening, that's when everybody kind of ran over.
Okay.
I think we're probably maybe the, I want to say maybe the second or third wave of the refugee generation that came. You know, compared to I think the first generation was probably like General Vang Pao and his immediate families and stuff. And then I think they had a second wave, and then we might have been like the third wave that came in at that part. But anybody, people that, came within 77, 78, and 79 was, like a lot of the very first kind of people. Till this day, I was born in 79, and a lot of people still they'd ask me, they go, "Man, you're older than us, but you're a citizen." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a citizen."
Interesting. So you said you had older siblings that were born. Were they born in Laos or were they born in Thailand?
One was born in Thailand and one was born in Laos. My older brother Tong was he was born in the refugee camp. So it's really hard for him to get. Because when you're born in a refugee camp like that, you there's no birth certificate or nothing that documents you down.
Right.
Even to this day, especially with all the, I think it's pretty tough. But I mean, he's been here. I mean, he's been here for, his whole life.
Okay.
My brother, when we came, he had to be about, he's 2 years older than me. He was about two. So.
Do you know how long they would have been in the refugee camps?
Maybe a year at tops, I think a year at tops.
Did they talk about that much?
No. Because my brother, they don't, I mean, these guys were too young. My older brother, those two guys down to me, they were like 2 years apart.
Okay.
So, my older brother he's never mentioned anything about, like, I don't think he could recall it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were too young to, I mean, even me trying to recall Illinois was kind of hard.
Yeah.
I remember when we left, we left Illinois, we moved to Fresno, and my father came first, and he actually got a place, and then my mom, me, my two younger brothers, I think my dad took my older brother and them, and then my two younger brother with me, we took the Greyhound out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for Chicago here.
Wow.
And I remember I was a crybaby. I was a really annoying crybaby that was on a bus and wouldn't stop crying. I guess, my grandma, my mom was trying to keep me quiet. And I remember, it was this older, nice guy that, I guess he wanted me to stop crying. And he actually, I think he gave me something like a harmonica or something that he gave me something. It was something, and I guess I actually stopped crying after a while. But my mom was like, "Wow, I was the worst kid on the bus."
That's got to be like a couple of days, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was 3. My brother Jerry was 2, and my younger brother Johnny was 1. So it was the 3 of us, and it was just mom and grandma. And, you know, I mean, mom and grandma, they don't speak English. I mean, we're all just, you know, they're just, you know, no English at all. And just, you know, you're coming in the Fresno blind, and it's just, yeah, but that's part of the...
Yeah, part of the journey.
The journey here, yeah.
Were there other Hmong folks in Danville?
I think a lot of sponsor went from Chicago. Hmm. But it went from... it was actually Chicago that was the biggest sponsor, and Wisconsin. Hmm. Like Milwaukee and like Madison. But that's how... I think that's how... a lot of the Midwest Hmong people came to form.
Okay.
Like, till this day now. Like, Minnesota, like, it became very popular. Mm. And, well, Minnesota is a very popular state, and it's, you know, I mean, they, for, like, you know, like, new refugee arrivals, you know, they still have a lot of wave, and Minnesota does accept a lot of refugees.
Interesting.
Till this day. So, I mean, you know, even after years and years and years of us, you know, you always see new refugee that comes out there, like, you know, Somalia. It's a big Somalia community in the Twin City up there. I think the Quran people, you know, Tibetan people. I mean, it's a lot.
Like, interesting.
Yeah, it's Minnesota has become the Twin City there has become a very big, diverse community out there, and even the Hispanic has moved up there. And it's, you know, when I first left back in out of Fresno here, 1998. The population of Hispanic in Minnesota is maybe, you know, very, very low.
Mm.
I mean, what you thought was Hispanic, these guys were all natives.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, I mean, the native community up there is big, too. I mean, it's always been the native land out
right.
there. Everything that you go up there, every street and name is named by natives.
Okay.
So, you know, like, you know, ain't that right? I think Minneapolis might be even.
I don't know, but yeah, there is a large native community.
Yeah.
Interesting. So then what was Fresno like when you got here? So you got here like in...
We got here...
82-ish, 83?
I want to say, yeah, 83. We came. We moved into.
Who was first born in Fresno then? Was Johnny and Jerry born?
No,
here?
Yeah, they're all born in Illinois.
So yeah.
Mai was the one born here.
Okay, so Mai.
Yeah, so my sister was born here. We moved into. See where 180 is now. It was right off of. Yeah, right there. Well, you know, actually, those apartments still exist. I mean, but it was right off of Turner and Barton, a little community right there on between Cedar, Belmont, Maple. So. We came, and I think a lot of the relatives kind of moved into those apartments, and we all, I remember me and you know, tons of the family members, like cousins and stuff, we all kind of stuck together.
Yeah, the Hmong community is very, like, to stick together. So, you know, like, if the relatives are in this area, then they all like to stay in that area.
Interesting.
So, like, say the apartment complex that they lived in, most of the relatives would probably be living in that same complex.
Interesting.
You know, that area was actually, you know, maybe back in the 80s, it was very popular of a lot of Asian people. I think it still is today. That little section of area, people right there.
How would you call that area?
What would I call it?
Like, is it what neighborhood or area?
I'm not sure. I mean,
it didn't have like a name.
It didn't have a neighborhood name. But you know, everybody would be like, you know, Maple Belmont,
okay,
or Cedar Belmont. In Yeah, it was right there by Maple Belmont, and you know, a lot of people were, like, around that area. Even till this day, I mean, you still have a big community of Hmong people that has, like, you know, like auto body shops and car shops, and you know, like even the stores up to like right there off of Belmont and Chestnut. I mean, it's the community is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even after so many years, I came back. I mean,
still there.
Still there. You know, all the freeways is lift up and stuff, and you know, yeah, the city's changed a lot since we've been gone too.
So, what are your memories of that? Or those early years?
Went to Ewing. Ewing Elementary School, and. You know, then it was, you know, there weren't too many buses that picked us up. I remember. It was certain bus that did pick us up, but I mean, we all had to go to a certain bus stop. I think I was in preschool when I think I had the school bus. But after a while, I mean, I remember my mom and my daddy used to drop us off at school. But you know what? It was weird because we were just kids then. We used to walk home from Ewing.
Yeah, we did. I did too. Yeah. Siblings. Yeah, I think it was just the norm back then.
Yeah, we walked home.
How long of a walk is that?
Oh, I had to been, let's see, from Ewing. It's on Olive and Chestnut. You know, well, it's a little past Chestnut a little bit. So we have to walk from there down Chestnut all the way down to Maple and then a little down south of Maple. That's quite a walk. Yeah. I think it was probably about, you know, maybe a good I think it had to be more, because we were more over here towards Turner more, so it was more towards Belmont more than Olive, you know. So I think it was a little over a mile.
Was it uphill?
No.
Both ways, the snow.
No, none of that stuff. I mean, back then was, there was a lot of us because, you know, we used to walk back home from school and it was just like, you know, just a bunch of little guys just walking back and kicking rock and, you know, picking up dirt wherever we were rolling.
What were the demographics of Ewing in terms of, like, what kind of people were there?
They had everybody. They had everybody was there.
It was diverse. It's funny because I went to that elementary school too.
Yeah, that school was very, that school.
After he moved away.
Okay.
But, yeah, from what I recall, it was.
That school was very diverse. I mean, it was, that community right there and that, at that time, it was very diverse. That school was very diverse. I remember it was a good population of Asian kids that were all there. I mean, because all my brother and all of us, and, you know, I had older cousins there, they were all there, you know, up to like, you know, the sixth grade. I mean, and we went there, I was probably there until maybe from kindergarten to the third grade, I want to say. And then we left there. And then my parents finally moved, and we finally moved. And then this is when we moved over to the east side of the southeast side of Fresno by the fairgrounds more. And we went out to that community. And we kind of, and that was when really, when, you know, a lot of the stuff we kind of, and that's when, you know, the growing up part really started taking off. And that community there was a tougher community than I think living out on Turner and Maple out there.
Where do you remember where you lived there?
We're right off Butler and Orange, right in that community.
Do you know why they wanted to go there?
I think my dad, you know, we're growing up fast and pretty big family. He found a bigger house.
Okay.
So he got us out of the apartments, you know. I think that's what it was, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, he actually found a bigger house, got us all out, and, you know, got us out of the, but that was when we got to that community, we were still kids, but, I mean, we went to Winchell's, and then, even Winchell's was,
Is that elementary school?
Yeah, that was elementary school. And that, you know what, that school, it had, there was a big community out there too. You know, you had a big community of Asian, and you have your Laos, Cambodian, the Hispanic, you know, some white, but real huge population Hispanic.
When you say Asian, do you mean Hmong or all, everyone, like mixture?
Yeah, mixture, yeah.
So like Hmong, Laotian, Cambodian?
Laotian, Hmong, Cambodian. And yeah, Vietnamese, you know, I mean, there was a variety of people. And, you know, to this day, I mean, I still know a lot of people. I just haven't seen them.
Right.
But yeah.
Do people get along the school, or are people kind of off in their little cliques?
No, not in elementary. Mm. You know, I mean, it's like everybody say, you know, I mean, when you were young, we never looked at color.
Right.
And stuff like that is taught, and it really is. It really is. I believe that, because, like, I mean, when we were kids, you know, I had white friends, I had Hispanic friends, I had, you know, every other race friends. I mean, you know, Cambodian friends, Laotian friends. And, but then after elementary, when we got into middle school, that's when all that stuff start to kick off.
Is that mostly like along kind of ethnic lines?
Yeah, I think, you know what, that was part of a, you know, part of the thing where, you know, really once you get to middle school and it's like, it kind of breaks off, and then like, you know, people started, you know, thinking about their own race, like, oh, no, this guy's this, and, you know, that guy's that, and you kind of like, you know, that's when everybody start pushing everybody away from each other and starts, you know, sticking close to their own little community. And, you know, you got your average bullies out there that, you know, I mean, they did a lot of their share, and they put a lot of their work in. And yeah, I mean, even getting bullied by like a lot of Hispanic guys, because those guys are, you know, usually pretty big at that point. But I mean, I had my share too. And, yeah, had our share with that, and we kind of everybody just kind of part away from each other. Mm. We still all know each other. But, I mean, everybody kind of ran back to their own little small community where they feel more safe.
Yeah. Did you like it out there?
Yes.
In Winchell's and or in the yeah, the whole neighborhood?
It was good. I mean, going to Winchell's wasn't that bad. I thought it was a fair little elementary school. And then when I started middle school, that was when everything started picking up. And then, the bad stuff, like you kind of inherit all the bad stuff from all the older people and you know, even like, you know, kind of certain game related stuff, you know, when you start, and that was the beginning of that kind of stuff. So middle school really started, you know, I mean, back in that early, you know, the 90s, late 80s, 90s, being, you know, you see all these, everybody was, you know, that was like the era where, you know, everybody was just, you know, it was a lot of racial stuff, a lot of, you know, you pick sides, always fights breaking out. Yeah, I remember, I mean, we had a lot of conflicts with the Hispanic at that time. And those guys have always been bullies. Even though we always kept our cool, those guys were always trying to find a way to get in. And I never understood it because, you know, I think they had a feel that there was more of them. So they always had a feel that, you know what, we just got to bully these guys around. And I think a lot of that stuff, you know, and it came down to a part where, you know, we were like, you know, we're not going to take this. And, you know, that's usually how all this conflict starts is, right. You know, it's young kid bullying another kid. At that age, I found myself hanging out with, you know, a lot of gangsters back then. You know, it was getting close to that, being that gang affiliated stuff. And cause you had to do what you had to do, so you don't. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't, you weren't associating with something like this, then you're pretty much in trouble. You're a target. Yeah. You know, you're a bystander. So
right.
I mean, it's stuff like that you can't run off. You know.
And so this is already picking up in middle school.
Yeah.
What school is this?
This is in when I started going, this was. They had a bus transfer, and they transferred us out to Fort Miller.
Which is Fort Miller's
west side. I think Fort Miller is considered west side, west central, probably. No. And
were there a lot of Hmong folks that were being transferred out?
Well, there was just, it was a lot of people in that east side of the community.
Okay.
Because they didn't have a middle school. Sequoia wasn't a middle school yet.
Hmm.
At that time, Sequoia was actually a freshman school,
okay.
Strictly for freshmen.
Yeah, just ninth graders.
Yeah, yeah, it was strictly for freshmen. It was weird.
I never heard of that. It's weird.
You never heard of that, right? Yeah. Sequoia was actually it was strictly for freshmen. So within that area, there weren't a middle school there. So what they did was everybody that was in that area, they picked us all up from the bus stop from Sequoia, and they shipped us out to Fort Miller. So I went out to Fort Miller for about 2 years, and everybody there in that whole community, there, they all went out there.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think it wasn't until after I finished What was he? We were in. I was in the 8th grade at Fort Miller. And that year, they switched Sequoia over into a middle school.
Okay.
And they, but then they started a 7th grade. And that was, they started a 7th grade first, and then they enrolled in the next year with the 8th grade, which they kept the 7th grade, and then they went to 8th grade, and they turned that into middle school then. And that was when Sequoia became a middle school.
Yeah, so that was already after you were done.
Yeah, that was after I was done.
So what were the main gang kind of rivalries?
You know, it was always the Bulldogs.
And Bulldogs are predominantly Hispanic or entirely?
Yeah, I think they're dominantly Hispanic.
Are there any Hmong Bulldogs?
Yeah, there is. There is actually. There's one. This one Hmong kid that was full. He was a Bulldog. And actually, I heard he got shot, and he did die. He died for the love of his friends and his set. But you know what? To him, those guys, they love him.
Yeah.
They respected him. They loved him. They treated him as a brother. You know, when he died, I know that a lot of his friends, they did a car wash and donation and stuff and helped him his funeral and everything. To me, it's where you grew up. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I have a lot of Hispanic friends.
Yeah.
To this day, I still have a lot of Hispanic friends. And I mean, I've never been a person that really, choose sides. I mean, it's just, sometimes problem comes and, hey, you just gotta deal with
Yeah.
it.
What were the main Hmong gangs then?
Well, the main Hmong gangs probably about at that time was probably, it wasn't that big. But the big Asian gang there at that time was TRG was a big gang. They were a big impact in that area.
Okay.
TRG and ABZ were the two big impact right there.
You know what those stood for?
Tiny Rascal Gang and Asian Boys. That's what those two stand for.
Okay.
But those two were the in that area the most dominant.
And so these are things that you kind of are already picking up on in middle school? Did you know about this?
Yeah, you start picking up in middle school because I mean you have friends and friends and and you see a lot of these guys and the older guys that run around, that's what they are. And you just like, oh, okay. if you got into like a little trouble with some outsider, then these guys usually, they come in and they help you out and they take care of you and back you up and stuff. And you kind of feel a little safe and you just kind of, you get in a little respect,
Right.
It's just like every, it's not, it's not what you try to be, but I mean, it just fell upon me,
Right, right.
That's just how it goes. After a while, I mean, all that gang stuff, I mean, we kind of pushed it away when we really, really, really started to break dance.
So then how did you, like, what is the kind of transition to breakdancing? How did you get into that?
That one was that's really weird one to really say. Because it really, you know what, it really picked up right at that, around that age. We used to, I mean, we had a lot of little, everybody in the neighborhood was onto that gang stuff. And, I seen friends that were getting locked up, childhood friends that you know, will get shot. You know, certain guys, you know, die. Certain guys, and when I think it was the turning point when I really started to get into breakdancing was, I don't really want to, you know, do this gang stuff anymore. Yeah. or be around these gang guys anymore, because you know what, I don't see a future in this thing. And that was when we really parted away from a lot of that stuff, and you know, and I started to break dance, and you know, I guess it was the new cool thing at that time. You had older guys, and everybody's like, you know, you're out there showing off your moves, and you thought, you know, and it was cool, you know. So that's when the breakdancing really, really started coming in, and we, tried to stay out of trouble, stay focused, you know. I mean, instead of fighting each other, we'll just battle it out for fun, you know. It's like, there was a changing point. It really took us out of that community. So
where did you first hear about breakdancing? See it? Like, what was your...
Let's see. Where did we really... I think it was at a dance show. I think it was a high school dance show. I wonder which one was it. It might have been Duncan.
Was it Duncan?
I think it might have been. Yeah, these guys were out there breakdancing, and I was like, well, these guys was...
Was it David and them?
I think David, yeah, the Bums guys, they were dancing then, but...
Because I know they started first.
Yeah. Because David and my older brother, Tong, was the two original guys that started Smurf. And David was he's part of Bums. But they started Smurf, and my brother, they just kind of threw it on us, and we just...
They recruited the younger guys.
Okay.
They said, hey, you guys take
yeah,
over.
Yeah, you guys take over. We just... I mean, we never thought that it was going to shoot out like the way it did. I mean, and we, you know, I guess we kind of carried it on and proved to a lot of the guys and everybody that, you know, hey, we can do it just like, you know, the top pro guys. You know? So, I mean, it was fun. I mean, but David, my brother, those two guys were actually the two that started that, and we ended up rolling in. It was my buddy Boom, me, my buddy Lo, Victor, Kong, and Meng Su. It was like about 6-7 of us, and we started it, and we just kept going with it, and then the more we dance, and then like it seemed like our little breakdancing community kind of grew. Yeah. But it all started with you know the Bums guys, Zumi Dimensions, and those guys were the slightly little older guys. And I mean, there's other people that were really there at the scene at the time already. But I think our crew probably made the biggest impact on breakdancing in Fresno.
For the Hmong community.
Well, the Hmong community and just getting outside of the community, like out of Fresno.
Okay.
Because we actually went out of city. Like we went battle like people like down to like, you know, we'll go out to like Visalia, Tulare, out to like Porterville, and we're battling a lot of people that were out of the city. And I think we kind of you know, we kind of made a little spot for Fresno that kind of showed Fresno that, you know, hey, Fresno's got some B-boys.
Right? How did you, like, when you're going out to the other places, like, how do you, what are they? Are they, like, organized battles, or are they just?
Yeah. I mean, we had, certain battles that were, you know, at that point, it was stuff that was, like, I mean, it was, like, actually, like, a, you know, a little small community where they had a B-boy battles, and it was, like, a, let me see, what was it at? I think we might have went out to Visalia or Tulare, one of those. Or I think I might have been Porterville, but they hosted it in a Rollertown spot.
In the what?
It was a Rollertown place.
Okay.
And it was a B-boy competition. Hmm. So we actually went out there. Oh, that was probably one of the biggest one that we went out there and to represent. And we came from Fresno down, and you know, all the guys in the southern cities down there, they're like, you know, they're waiting for, you know, and it was a big battle because they had a lot of good guys down there, and we came in, and I still remember when we came in, a lot of these guys, there's probably over 20 crews of breakdancing crews out there, but we dominated the scene.
Okay.
Really dominated the scene, and a lot of people were just, they were surprised how good we got after, you know, cause we picked up, we weren't real, like, we picked up pretty quick, and a lot of these guys, they were really admired by that. So,
what time are we talking here?
I want to say about 94. I want to say I was about 94 at that time. 94, 95. Yeah, it was somewhere about there. I would say 94. 93, 94, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. But I think that was when we were really in coming in and in our prime there. And it was just like, cause breakdancing then was, it was, you know, all these new moves now, you know, I mean, all the moves that everybody was doing, like back then you saw these breakdancers. I mean, some of the very first people that breakdanced was like, they did like Applejacks, and you remember those moves, right?
Yeah.
You know, they do a little shuffle around, and they do Applejacks, double Applejacks, you know, they do a little,
and
do a little footwork, and then
the power moves really came around.
I mean, one of the first, some of the first, let me see, one of the best guys I ever seen was Ivan.
B-boy Ivan,
and Ivan came down to Fresno. We were all just little beginners then. And Ivan came down to Fresno. And this guy, he's a pro.
Yeah.
And Ivan came down. He had two younger guys that were with him. And when they started doing flares, windmills, halos, and we were just like, wow. Those guys right there. Those guys are good. And doing like maybe like four or five flares back then, and you were like, that guy's good.
Right.
He can do the flares.
Do you know why he would have came down? Was it just like an event, or?
You know, I think it was an event, but you know, I think one part was Fresno was the hip hop community, and the beat boy scene was actually, it was expanding. It was getting really popular then. But we still weren't that good. Mm. And you knew people like that were from the Bay down to like LA and stuff like that. These guys were, they've been doing this, you know, down in San Diego, all these guys, and they've been breakdancing for, years. So these guys, they came in and they kind of opened the whole ballpark for all of us.
Okay.
I think Pablo, till this day, Pablo, he respected Ivan so much. I think Pablo named his son Ivan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's if I'm correct, but I,
right.
mean, I remember. I think, you know, I could be wrong, but that's what it is. He named his son Ivan. But honestly, Ivan was, he was a beast. You know, he wasn't, you know, when you looked at the guy, he wasn't, he had age at that time. And he wasn't the most, you know, in shape looking okay. like type of guy. But a guy, he does the moves like he doesn't have a sweat at it at all.
Wow. Just take a step back. When you said you saw folks dancing at Dunkin' and stuff like that, did you know what it was? Did you know, like, that was breakdancing?
You know, honestly, I didn't, you know, it was, yeah, you kind of knew it was breakdancing, but it was
so
like.
So you know, like, where you would have
yeah,
known that beforehand? Like, how you would have.
You know, we always saw, like, certain movies here and there, and then, you know, I mean, like, but I was, you know, that was some of the first stuff when people start really, you know, showing off their moves here and there, here and there. And I thought it was a cool thing. I was like, you know what, hey. You know, I never thought I would be a dancer, but it was weird because I kind of picked it up pretty easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you start? Do you
I can't even remember. I want to say maybe like 92, 93 when we really started really doing it. Somewhere around there.
So is this still middle school or high school?
This is actually the late of middle school.
Okay.
But it really impacted into high school and, yeah, all through my high school years. You know, I danced and all the way through high school.
Which high school?
I went to Roosevelt. Well, where's high school? People still say.
There's a B-boy scene there, yeah?
Yeah. The B-boy scene out there, it started a lot with me and a lot of the guys that were out there. And, yeah, had a big impact on Roosevelt. Waldo was out there. Charles Pablo was out there. We all went to Roosevelt.
Yeah.
My brother and
That's
all
crazy.
Of us. Yeah. But, yeah, the hip-hop scene, you know, I mean, we really brought the hip-hop scene, you know, I mean, you know, out there and all the B-boys and dancers, you know. I think my senior year I was voted most talented. And
nice.
But I never took my high school picture. Skipped out on my high school picture.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Probably see my name in a yearbook, but you won't see a picture of me.
Oh, no.
All through high school, I mean, we breakdance.
Are you dancing at school or during school?
Yeah, we'll dance through the hallways. Waldo would always come up to me in the hallway, meet him up halfway in class. He'd be like, Phil, show me some new moves. I was like, all right, I'll show him a new move. He'll practice, he'll pick up on something. He goes, how about this, Phil? Here, check this out. And I'm like, it's pretty good. You gotta keep it up. You know, it was a good thing. You know, a lot, you know, it was cool. Now everybody kind of fell to spot.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You know, when we got to, you know, after, you know, middle school there, high school kicked in, and, you know, that's when, and a lot of the breakdancing stuff kind of took away a lot of the racial thing. Hmm. And it kind of stopped that a little bit. You know, you kind of see it like you start having friends that, hey.
Right.
And, you know, it was just like, you know, you still had your people that, you know, that were like, you know, they're all still game related and kind of. And those guys, you just kind of push them to the side now. You're just like, these, you know, there's a different world than that world now.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, you see that the community is coming back, you know, from forms of color, you know, and everything. And it was, you know, it was beautiful, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you got this, you know, you got people from this community that's coming over, you got this community that's coming over, and, you know, after a while, you know, you know, everybody kind of unites all over again, and, you know, so the tension wasn't as much as it was.
So people are identifying as, like, dancers?
Exactly. And then, and he comes from a whole community of his own. These guys come from a whole community of his own. We became friends, and he opened his world up to us. He opened his world to us, and it was just like, it wasn't so bad.
Okay.
You know, after a while, people just say, you know, a lot of these people, you know, even the gangbangers are like, they see us, they're like, they're just breakdancers. They're a bunch of breakdancers.
Okay.
You know.
Is there any overlap, I mean, between the gang scene and the b-boy scene?
Like,
or are they separate?
Like a beef, like.
Or just, are those worlds overlapping at all? Are they coming into contact?
We did too, because we were affiliated with those gangs at a certain point. But when we actually started breakdancing, you know, a lot of those gangbangers were like, man, these guys are getting all the girls, man. We need to start breakdancing. I mean, it really did. It turned their head and their ways and actually, you know what? Maybe I can't say it, but I think it did impact the game related kids.
Okay.
You know, to a certain, you know, and they start seeing a different view instead of just, you know, hey, let's go out here and, you know, be reckless and, you know, cause, you know, and I think everything kind of, you know, really that breakdancing really, really, really saved this community of us. Because within that, I know that was the biggest crime rate in years around that 91, 92, 90, 93. And I'm pretty sure that within 90, like around 94, 93, 94, 95, you can see that crime rate kind of drops down.
So then, so your brother and you said David start Smurfs. Do you know when they started?
I want to say it was like 92. I think they just started it for fun and they just threw the name on us.
Do you know, like, where Smurfs comes from or what the...
These guys just thought they were cute or something, so they wanted to be Smurfs. I never knew why we picked up the name, and we just said, oh, well. And people just started to call, that's the Smurf crew right there. And we're like, well, yeah, I guess we're the Smurfs.
So when did you guys kind of take over?
We took over after... My brother and David, well, and then David actually went and joined Bums. So we just kept the name, and then we just took over, and then...
That was, maybe
93? 93, yeah. And that's how the whole breakdancing, we started practicing, we'll go out to, like, well, all the parks, all the Romaine parks. We go to, like, what's the other one over? The one right off of, is it Maple and Butler? Yeah, I can't remember that place.
Is that Mosqueda Center?
Yeah. We used to go out there a lot, too. We'll go out there. We'll go to Homies, right? Homes Playground?
Mm-hmm.
We used to go to Homes Playground. We used to go to Homes Playground. And we'll have practice session there. And, you know, anybody could come out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be in there. And then people will come out and people will, like, you know, I mean, because that's where a lot of these young youth community kind of hung out. And people will come out and they'll see us break dance, and they kind of, you know, whoever likes and whoever wants to break dance, they come by and they watch us, and we're all just out there practicing in the gym or practicing in the little sport room, the little playroom with all the, and yeah, after a while, you know, and that I think that's how that community really. Really, really, really explode. Even in the, you know, young guys like Charles and them. You know, Charles and them will come around, and Charles and Pablo came around, and you know, we kind of influenced them into this whole, you know, b-boy scene. Down to like the Wizard guys, like Lou and Robert and those guys. And those guys, they came out, those guys were actually a little younger than us, and, you know, those guys, they kind of looked up to us. It was kind of like we kind of looked up to, like, the bum guys at a certain, but then right away we outdid the bum guys, like, right away, and, you know, I mean, even guys like, I mean, there's still a couple good guys out there that always break dance. Let's see, that other crew, that Zoomies Dimension, was a little older crew that the Bumps will always battle. Those two groups will always battle each other.
Were they predominantly Hmong too?
Bumps were predominantly Hmong. Zoomies was predominantly white and Hispanic.
Okay.
And those guys, they used to, it was another crew that we used to always break dance with too. But they were like a good friend of ours. It was called Mystic Motion, that's what they were called. And that was a Filipino and I think Laotian group.
Local?
Local. Those guys were local. I forgot half of the guy's name. Well, we'd be at the fairgrounds. We used to go to the fairgrounds. We'll break dance out there at the fairgrounds. Let's see. You remember the old stadium?
I don't. I'm new here.
You're new here, huh?
Yeah.
They used to have it wasn't a stadium. It was the concert hall.
Okay.
It was
like an outdoor one, or?
Yeah, it was an outdoor one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by the. It was right by the side entrance off of Chance. And there used to be this outdoor, and then this little wide grass field. And we, every year, we'll go there and break dance out there. And a lot of people will come out and break dance with us at the fairgrounds. It was just, you know, it was just cool that, you know, everybody's showing their new moves, and, you know, everybody would practice for about, you know, a good 2-3 months, and we'll come back and meet each other again. And that's always how it's been.
We do the music, like,
we were really poor at that back then. You know, I mean, DJing was, we didn't really have an actual DJ. You know, being a DJ cost more than breakdancing.
So people just bring like a
boombox, put in a tape, play. That was basically it. Tape play, CD play. You know what I mean? That was that back then. We didn't really have a straight local DJ. I mean, that was something I always wanted to do. That's when, you know, I think after the breakdancing career, and that's when I really picked up on the DJing part.
Okay. So when you said that you guys kind of like overtook Bums really quickly, like what set you apart? Like,
I think they were, the thing was, with the Bums, they were more of a, you know, like just like a up dance dancer.
Okay.
And you know, they were just really stylish type of guys, you know, from, you know, like, you know, waving, popping to, you know, just, you know, regular, you know, dance move to where I think that era was probably where the era where power moves and like style and everything came around and real, like it was the beginning of what I think that era where B-boy actually came, you know, breakdancing was, you know, coming back alive from the 80s. But then this time around, it wasn't just the windmills and, you know, the shuffles and all the, you know, the little footworks no more. This is when it was the era of a super power moves where, you know, these guys, you're flying in midair, you're rolling in the dirt, you know, I mean, you're doing windmills, you're flying back up, and, you know, you're doing head spins and, you know, you're doing, and you putting all these combos all together. And this is, that was that time where everything that you could think of in the 80s that they couldn't perfect, and we were perfecting.
Okay.
And that's what it was. And I think that's one reason why, like I said, with the Bums was, it always been just a stylish crew, just, you know, and they weren't really focused on into this power move.
Okay.
There's two guys that were with Bums that were pretty good, and were actually good friend of mine to this day. Well, actually, they're related brother-in-law to mine now. but Chan and Mao, and those two guys were part of Bums, and they were good. But Mao was probably, I think Mao was one of the first guys that I ever witnessed. He flared 90.
Hmm.
Yeah. Mao was the first one that did a flare 90. I think they took us out in that one move. That one time. That was that one move. We beat him on everything except for that one
move.
But yeah. It was, to flare 90 was, It was like doing a, it was very conquering, you know what I mean? Because you're going low and then you're going up. And it was really hard back then for everybody. It kind of reminds me when Pablo did the first air track, like air flares.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always a move that we always try to, I thought about it a long time ago. I go, well, why don't we do a flare into like an air swipe in the air back into a flare? And I always try to do it, but I was like, oh, this is impossible. I mean, it was something that we all thought about. I mean, but it was really impossible to do. And when I saw when these guys, they actually started doing it, and it was like, when they started off like they're doing the 90, and they're just doing the rotate, and I was like, that's about right. Yeah, you do got to start up pretty high. Because we always used to try to start it off from a flare and then go into an air flare, but then was like, you gotta be able to go from a flare to a 90 and you had to perfect that to get right. the air flare, and that was really hard. I was surprised that that Pablo really perfected that move. I was like, wow.
So I'm just curious, like in Fresno, like how do you, where are you learning like the terminology? How are you learning about power moves?
We watched a lot of videos of people.
Do you remember what those were or like where they come from?
A lot of the guys from San Jose, Don Ivan, a lot of those, let me see, it was, they had like Juggernauts videos. I think it was like, and we picked up a lot from those guys because those guys, we watched their videos and those guys were like, what's that crew, Macalette? Those guys were, I think it's a Filipino group and they're from the Bay somewhere out there. And we watched those guys break dance and I remember, I think one of their main guys, I think the name was, couldn't remember if it was a Robert. I think it was Robert. And he was their top breakdancer guy. Mm. And this guy came in and he was doing like, you know, everything was off his hand. He was doing UFO dance. He was just flying all over the floor. It was just like, he'll come back, he'll doing like straight leg flares, back to like UFO dance. He was just like flying all over his hand cricket, everything. We're just like, wow. And we picked up a lot from everybody. So, you know, watching like, you know, videos of like Little Caesar, you know, Crazy Leg, all those guys. You know, the true B-boys in, you know, even like Beat Street, you know, you went back and watched Beat Street and, you know, all that stuff, yeah, I mean, you had to go back and watch, you know. I mean, you know, a lot of that stuff we picked up and just kind of, you know, you kind of blend it into your own little moves. Mm.
Did you guys identify at that time as B-boys? Is that something you would have said?
You know, B-boy, that term of B-boy didn't really take effect until a while later. When, I think it was a while later when that name, like a B-boy, B-girl, really came into effect, you know, back then. People, you know, the majority of people would just call us, a bunch of breakdancers.
Okay.
A bunch of breakdancers. That's what it was, wasn't it? You know, and then, you know, like I said, I mean, I guess the real cool term really came around when, you know, B-boy this, B-boy that.
Okay.
You know how when, back in the days when B-boy Summit was pretty big.
Okay.
Always, I wanted to go out there, but never had a chance to go out there. Never. I know I was always host somewhere down south, and I think it was like San Diego or something like that. But never had a chance to go down there. I think we kind of gave up on the dancing before, you know. But it was something I should have went and experienced, but I think I got too cool for it.
What does that mean?
I started DJing.
Okay. So that was a whole other thing?
Yeah, it was a whole other phase.
I think that, though, you started.
Well, I started skating.
Yeah, skating.
Okay.
I was skating. I was, like, doing, like, inline skating. I was really skating for a while.
Was that a scene out here, too? Or?
A little bit.
It was part of, you know, it was cool. I mean, I think we did it. It was pretty fun, and we did a lot of inline skating. We did a lot of street ride, and we were like grinding curves and stuff, handrails. We did a lot of stuff. I mean, I think the longest handrail I ever did was the La Monica Stadium.
Okay.
We actually hopped over the gate, went up there, and
dang,
rode the handrail. I was a 42-step handrail.
Wow.
Yeah, I rode that guy like a couple times. And we used to try the Fresno State one too.
Yeah. Couldn't get in?
We actually went in there once, and then we snuck in once, and then I was trying to do the frontal state, the football stadium, Hammerhill, the kink one on the backside.
Okay.
Yeah. I rolled down a quarter, and I hit the kink, and I fell off. And security came, and they kicked us out. We had a book. But, yeah, that was my last accomplishment, was trying to accomplish that handrail, but
okay.
Before I left, yeah, that was the last one. But, yeah, I mean, it was, rollerblading was cool at that time. I think inline skating came in at that part.
Okay.
Of, because it was really popular. That rollerblading was really popular when it actually came out from the Midwest and from all these hockey guys. And, you know, it's a training thing that a lot of people did. But, so I did that. I think while I was breakdancing, I was skating at the same time too. Mm-hmm. But then I started running towards the skating stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just, and then after that was when I quit skating and I really started DJing.
Okay.
I wish I'd have kept skating though.
Yeah.
I would have been a lot slimmer.
It happens, man. Well, so what were you guys then competing or battling?
We'll compete. We'll go to like certain. We're hosting like certain battles out, like you know, all the parks around here. Normally, when they're the bigger battles would probably be, you know, maybe when we did a lot of art battles going down, like Visalia, Tulare, Porterville, down south there.
Okay.
And actually up to Madeira and we're just getting out. But it wasn't too far. I think the city, it wasn't too far because we never made it up to SAC.
Okay.
And we always wanted to go up to SAC to battle this great crew called Chaos. And these guys are really good. At that time, they had this real kid, this kid named Miguel that was really good. It might have been a good battle then. But it was, I don't know how we got into this community where the word just kind of spread out so fast. Like
it was just word of mouth.
Yeah, it was just word of mouth.
Oh, hey, you
know,
right? Like, we have cell phones and
yeah. I mean, there were certain little flyers here and there, and all of a sudden it was just the word of mouth. It was like, hey, I got this big bow over here. Let's go. And we're just like, all right, what day is it? All right, we'll get there, or you know, I mean, like, we'll be at the Romaine Parks and all this stuff, and everybody would just run around like, oh yeah, this guy's gonna bow this guy today, man. Let's go check it out. These two guys really gonna go at it. I used to always have people call me out here and there because I was, I think it was one of Charles and Pablo's buddy, Marcio.
Hmm.
Marcio always called me out. He always wanted to battle against me. And that was after I quit.
Okay.
He always wanted to battle against me. I think Waddle always wanted to battle against me, but he knows that it's gonna take a couple more years before he gets it. But I think Waddle still has some video of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know that I remember he had some video of me really, really dancing. Yeah, I try not to. I really hate the. Record myself because I go back and I look at my breakdancing moves and I'm like, oh, imperfections.
Yeah. When you don't record it, then you can remember like, oh man,
it was
nailed it.
Good. But when you go back and you watch the video, you're like, now that's how everything is. It's
yeah.
Like, I mean, when you grow up in life and you get older and you go back, you go, oh man, that could have done that way better.
Right.
But that's just the mind talking.
So who are the crews that you guys battled?
Bum was one of them. Wizard was probably one of the bigger crews that always battled us, because they were actually the younger crew. Mm. Well, out of the three of us, the three of us, it was always Bums, us, Wizards, and then Pablo and Charles, and then when they came out. But Pablo was actually part of Smurf with us. Even my buddy Slow from DIS, he became Smurf with us. I think at that one point, we collected all the best breakdancers in Fresno. And that's when, I think that's one thing why Smurf was kind of out there, was a lot of the best breakdancer that was in Fresno, we kind of collected them, and we went out of town. Mm. So when we went up to, we'll go out to like Visalia, and we'll battle like the whole city of Visalia. And I mean, I can't recall how many groups are out there, because these guys, there's quite a few groups out there. I mean, I totally forget all their names of all those groups, but there's quite a few of those guys. But we'll gather like majority of the best guys in Fresno. We'll go out of the city, and we'll all battle each other. But we come as, you know, this is Fresno coming
right,
out.
Right, right.
And Visalia was always, they were a little behind from us. So every time we come out, you know, pretty much a lot of those guys, they kind of just sat back and took a view and just kind of, you know, watch and analyze, and you know, they, you know, kind of see how we did it, because you know, back then there were no such thing as YouTube,
and, right?
I mean, it was good to see somebody that came out and actually did all that stuff for you to watch. So we kind of took over that city. They knew that every time Fresno came, all the Fresno guy came, Fresno's pretty much the dominant city. So we went out, we took out Visalia, Tulare, we went out to Porterville, went out to even to Bakersfield, and we battled all the way out there. A lot of the guys from all over that region, that southern region, they came out. I just can't remember. I remember there's one dude. He was, I don't think his name was Tyrone. I don't think so. But it was, but he was pretty good. And we actually went out there, and he was probably one of the better guys that was in that region down there. Okay. And he actually, he put a dent on us at that first time we went out there to see him. He did. He was doing flares, and he paused in midair, and then he'll flare the other way.
Oh, nice.
And we were like, man, this guy is strong.
So are these organized battles, or they're just the same kind of just call-out?
Call-outs. It was just, you know, I mean, like, just meet-ups, call-outs, and we'll just go out and, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know, hey, there's an event going on here. Come out. And it was open for everybody.
Okay.
It would just, you know, and certain people would be like, yeah, this crew's going to show up. This crew's going to show up. Even... See, another good group that was at that time, and they're still really popular to this day, was Style Elements.
Okay.
With, I think, Remind and those guys, was it, I believe. And we battled those guys up in, I think it was in Madeira once. And those guys, when I saw those guys dance, I was like, yeah, these guys are the real deals. they're real B-boys. They're not not this real, the Style Element came in, and reason why I liked them because they're really similar to me.
Okay.
These guys weren't all just super power move, and you know, these guys, I mean, they had power moves. They had a lot of style, footworks, poses, you name it, they had it all. And real, real good shufflers. It was a well blend of everything. You know, these guys could pop lock. I think Style Element was probably one of the crews that I remember that was an all around, you know, variety.
Okay.
These guys were, I'm saying, good, fresh, new. You know, they had moves, had styles. You know, they put a whole different. I think they put a whole different impact into a lot of these kids nowadays. To where, you know, a lot of these kids, it's not just about, because everybody could do a power move and
right,
and it's repetitive.
Right.
You know. Unless you're doing a super power move that nobody can ever do it besides you. But I mean, but having your own style was always, I think, a key source that kind of splits you from the average.
Right.
And I always told a lot of the people that I breakdance with was, you gotta find yourself.
Right.
And you gotta be that different individual where it's like I could teach you everything I know.
Right.
But the truth is we will never dance the same because we don't function the same.
Right. Different bodies.
Exactly. Different body, different weight. I mean, you're gonna do something different to me. And your taste and my taste is gonna be totally different. And I always told people, like, you know, what you like is what you like, and that's what you're gonna do with you. And that's how you gotta build your own style.
Interesting.
And you pick up certain individual. I mean, you watch this guy dance, and it's everybody's got their own people that they idolize and
right.
And they admire or they, and certain people that, you know, they see as their mentor and stuff. And everything, you know, and it comes around and I taught a lot of these, you know, young kids I think to this day, I think we still impact them pretty hard because, you know, they still, I mean, it's still going on. I've been gone back. I moved out of the city for almost, 18 years?
Wow.
And I came back and all of a sudden I get a phone call like, hey, you want to do an interview? I'm like, on what? And he goes, on the history of breakdancing. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, well, I don't know, I haven't breakdanced in years, but I think I could still move, but right. I mean, it'd probably be aching the next day.
So did you guys ever, try to venture out, like, into the bigger B-boy communities in, like, the Bay and L.A.?
Was that
too far?
It was too far. Because we weren't, you know, you got to understand, we were probably still, you know, high schools. And when we really were breakdancing, we were right about, like, what, 14, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. I think we really quit. We stopped at breakdancing at the age of 17. And 17 was that age mark where you actually really, really started going out of state.
Right, right.
But that was, like, the stopping point for us already. And I think if it would have been great if we would have had like older supportive siblings or like supportive parents that would have took us out and actually, you know, put us in a lot of these, you know, and participate in a lot of these other shows. But I mean, we were just a bunch of young kids that were just, you know, just doing something that we like, and we're just, you know, I mean, if we could get to that destination, we try to. Mm. I mean, you back then, you know, we'll walk to all these places or take the bus to all these places just to see a certain stuff, you know. But majority of the time, we walked all over the place. Uh-huh. And, you know, having a car and riding was, you know, maybe out of, you know, 30 of us, maybe we had one friend that had a car. And, you know, I mean, that's his parents' car that we're borrowing, you know what I mean? So that was the thing. It's like, I mean, the reason why we didn't go out too far in certain places was because we didn't have that transportation.
Okay.
I think that was the main key, was not having that transportation. Or it would have been funner if we would have did. I think we could have ventured it off. You know, and you know, that's one thing about, like, you know, guys like, you know, the younger crews like Wizard and like, you know, like Climax and, you know, Climax, you know, those guys, they kept it up to that certain age where, all right, we could go here, we can go here, we can go here, you know.
Were you aware? Did you know, like, kind of generally what was happening in the Bay in LA?
Oh yeah, we knew. We had a figure. I mean, we always wanted to go out there and just to test out the water and but I mean, it's just hard going out there.
Yeah.
So never had that chance to get out there. But those guys, the thing with them was these guys, they heard about us, so they came here to find us.
Who's that?
You know, guys like Michaelette, or those guys were always out of town. Even Ivan and those guys, they heard about Fresno scene was popping, and you know, they came down, and these guys were like, yeah, let's go see what these you know. So, but you know, other than that, I mean, I'm just thankful to be part of this little community that grew, that, you know, I never expect this thing to really like pop off and take off like the way it did, you know. So yeah, I think we did put a little mark and a little dent into this whole scene, and you know, left a mark on them, and you know, a lot, you know, I think put, especially, just starting this whole hip hop, you know, scene. I mean, because it wasn't just dancing, you know, it was like, and you had the art behind it, you had, you know, the hip hop rap, you know, back then, not there weren't too many rappers back then, there weren't. And, you know, and in the DJing part, it was like, I mean, you know, I was, you know, back then I was like, I mean, the tagging part was like, it was pretty bad back then. I mean, I did a little tagging myself, but I mean, it was just.
What was your tag?
I went by with this nickname called as Lump.
Okay. Lumpy.
That was me, and everybody still remembers me by Lumpy, especially in the breakdancing community, in the whole hip hop scene. Everybody's like, "Yeah, that's Lumpy." It's like, but you know, my real name is Ville, and you know, even, but yeah, it was just, it's, you know, it's a cool part of.
Were you guys tapped into that? Like, were you hanging out, like, with graffiti artists and DJs, or is that just kind
of? We were just a bunch of kids that just,
Yeah.
We didn't, I mean, what was it? I remember meeting up with the, what was it? Who was pretty good out here? Was it Zoomies? Zoomies? You ever heard of that guy?
No, was that Graf?
He was a graffiti artist.
I've heard of Pastiche, like, I think.
I think he was way before those guys.
Okay.
I think his name was a bigger guy, Zumbies. I think his name was Zumbi. And he did a lot. I mean, he didn't really go out. But he did a lot of graffitis too. He was pretty good. I thought he was, he's a real artist. He was pretty popular around here. He went to Roosevelt. He was actually a year older than me. And that guy was, I thought he had good graffitis.
Okay.
And he even had a booth once where he used to do airbrushes.
Okay.
Yeah.
For like jackets and shirts.
Shirts,
and stuff.
Jackets, okay. And all that stuff. And he was just painting around. And yeah, he had a little booth that he did that. He went back to, I think he was working at Roosevelt after a year after that, or after he graduated, he came back as a art staff kind of, and he was doing a lot of artworks and helped out around a lot, but yeah, I thought that guy was really talented.
Nice. Bless you.
Yeah.
The kind of last kind of general question I have then would be, how is this being received in the, like, in the Hmong community? Like, are your parents okay with it, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, like, with my parents and them, like, you know, my parents thought, like, you know, because I had two older brothers that were, you know, they were affiliated with gangs and stuff, and those, both my older brother, they, you know, they had to serve time, so they got locked up. For, you know, juvenile, but they kept, you know, they were doing crimes and stuff, and, you know, those guys got locked up, and they probably did a couple of years each.
Wow.
And my parents thought that, oh man, the way we're looking and all the kids and everything are going, that we would probably fall in my older brother in footsteps. But, you know, actually this breakdancing thing kind of came in and kind of, I think within our community, it really cooled down the community. Because at that one point, a lot of the young kids was, you know, they're really looking into like being like gangs and being gang related to have that comfort feel. And I think when we started breakdancing, a lot of the kids that were under us and younger than us, they really found a different way to just kind of lay back and you know, and you kind of set your mind into something different instead of focusing on, you know, a hatred and,
right,
in whatever that they're doing, you know. So,
do you think like the elders, people, do they recognize that? Do they see like breakdancing as a positive alternative?
I think, you know, it's, you know, I think they really had a, you know, the older people had really dig deep. You got any tissue? You know, like I said, I think the older generation, they, you know, I think deep down inside, I think they did seen it.
With your parents, how do you think they felt about it, though?
You know, I mean, it kept us, you know, at home a little more, you know, compared to, you know, always out and about,
right.
You know, you'll be gone, you know, and I think it was a real, real good thing, because, You know, you're not, we're not out there, you know, causing the whole community ruckus anymore. You know, we just kind of stuck together and, you know, did our little part, you know. And kind of, you know, you kind of focus on this. It's kind of like, you know, kind of like taking a karate class or something.
Okay.
And it's not about like just, you know, learn how to fight.
Right, right.
It's like, you know, and it's like in teaching self, proper self-manner, proper,
right.
You know.
Discipline.
Discipline, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was, you know, it was just a part of a transition in life that we did. And, you know, I think my parents were really surprised that we didn't follow my older brother's footstep, and, you know, and because I think my parents was more, they were more afraid of me because I was a little more of the more wild one compared to my older brother and them. And I think they were really shocked and surprised that because that I didn't really full blown into that route.
Okay.
So that was, you know, I think it was a good thing with the full community was, you know, stuff like that, like younger kids. And then, you know, I mean, we felt as we were like the big brothers of this younger generation. And a lot of these younger generations, you know, they kind of followed us.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, hey, being a gang wasn't the cool thing
right.
No more. You know, being a breakdancer or a b-boy is the cool part. So a lot of these younger generation, this whole community, they kind of followed us, and, you know, they started, you know, and they started doing what they're doing. And, you know, I think it helped and saved a lot of the youth and stuff. I really believe so.
That's awesome. Well, you get ready for this panel. Is there anything in general you want to? Anything we missed or?
No, I don't think. I think we missed not much. Like as far as, you know, I mean, my history of breakdancing. I mean, I'm just. I don't think I miss anything at all. Just, you know. I think the only thing I miss is I missed out of Fresno for 17 years.
Yeah.
That's my main thing.
Okay.
I mean, but it, you know, it's a whole different ballpark going up there too, though. Yeah.
Can imagine. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate
it. No problem, man.
Cut this off.